Rain is a subject that comes up in the news a lot. It can be a blessing. It can be a curse. In times of drought, there are great prayers for rain. In times of floods, there are great prayers that be no rain. Rain are both good for watering the crops. They're good for bringing seed to fruition. They are not good when they come in the wrong time or when they come in superabundance. I'm sure that the friends and the people who live in the states of Texas and that area, we were there 3 weeks ago, they were hoping so much for rain. Now I'm sure they can't wait till it stops. And you see the floods in San Antonio, and there they had not had rain for several months. But then when it came very heavily. We were just talking to, forget your name, the friend of Ella's, but she was telling, she lived in Israel some 25 years ago, and in the Negev, in Israel, she was mentioning that dry and arid land, when the rains come, the wadis fill fast, and they're soon overflowing their banks. So rain can be either a blessing or a curse. But it is certainly an essential to the growth of crops. In Bible times, it apparently was true that there were two predominant periods of rainfall in Israel. They're referred to in several of the Old Testament scriptures as the early and the latter rain. One of those referred to at the beginning is in Jeremiah, the 5th chapter, verse 23. Neither say in their heart, let us now fear the Lord our God that giveth the rain, both the former and the latter in his season. He reserveth unto us the appointed times of harvest. It's interesting that the Hebrew words that are used in the Old Testament for the words former and early and latter do not have primary significance to time. They've come to take on the significance, but they have to do more with the quality of the rain that came. The word that is translated the former rain, in some translation, is the darting rain. And you've seen rain when it darts. It's sharp, penetrating rain. It just soaks right into the ground. And that's a very essential rain, particularly in the season before planting, because it not only soaks the ground, but it helps to break up and aerate the ground that it is going into. And so the former or the darting rain, that which is translated latter rain is elsewhere translated the gathering rain, and refers to a softer fall of rain, a rain that drenches, but drenches more in a steady downpour rather than a fast, abrupt downpour. Interesting enough, and it probably was called the gathering rain, because it fell just before the harvest. It fell in the spring months. In fact, we're given the timing of this in some of the verses we're going to be coming to. But before we get to that timing, we'd like to look at another scripture that talks about these two rains. And this is found in Hosea, book of Hosea, chapter 6, the first three verses. We want to note as we read these verses that he likens the rain to the coming of the Lord. The two are brought together as the rain comes and the relation to the coming of the Lord. It says, come and let us return unto Jehovah, for he hath torn and he will heal us. He hath smitten and he will bind us up. After 2 days will he revive us. In the third day he will raise us up and we shall live in his sight. Then shall we know if a follow on could to know the Lord. His going forth is prepared as the morning. He shall come unto us as the rain, as the latter and the former rain cometh upon the earth. I think it's probably in this connection that a suggestion is given In the early volumes of the Watchtower reprints, on page 643, it's a letter written by a Brother Parsons. I doubt, Carlton, if he's related to the Brother Parsons that you knew up in Oregon. He may have been related, but there does not appear to be that relationship. The timing seems to be very, very early for that, because it's written in the 1880s, this letter. But in this letter, he suggests, and we're going to follow his suggestions through, that the early rain represents the Lord's first advent, and the latter rain, the second advent. Now, that certainly seems in keeping with the Hosea reference, where he speaks about the 2 days and the third day, where he says, after 2 days he will revive us, in the third day he will rise us up. And then he speaks about the early and the latter rain in this connection. That it is the raising up after two, we would feel, thousand-year periods, and into the third thousand-year periods when this latter rain comes. Now, I might mention here the, by our calendars, the latter rain comes first and the early rain comes last. But that's because we're going on the Gregorian calendar. That starts in January. But if you use the ancient calendar, beginning in the month Tishri in the fall, then the early rain was the fall rain just preceding the sowing period. And the latter rain was the rain that was in the month Nisan, which just preceded the harvesting period, which began later in Nisan. In fact, we're told today that the latter rains have just begun in Israel. They've started now. Let's see what the earlier rains are. The fall rains have begun in Israel. In Joel, the second chapter, verse 23, Joel 2:23, we read, "Be glad then, ye children of Zion, and rejoice in the Lord your God, for he has given you the former rain moderately, and he will cause to come down for you the rain, the former rain and the latter rain in the first month." Now there's two things we learn here. He said that the former rain comes down moderately. And yet we know that the word means darting. It means penetrating. So it is evidently not referring to penetrating in volume, but in density, in the method in which it breaks from the clouds. And the latter rain, he said, is in the first month. So we have a dating for that latter rain. There is an interesting commentary on this term, formerly moderately, and we are going to read this commentary and suggest it as a secondary reference only, not as a primary definition. But it is interesting, and we would like to share it with you. It's from Matthew Henry's commentary to the whole Bible. "He has given you a teacher of righteousness." So the marges read, "For the same word that signifies rain signifies a teacher. And that which we translate moderately means according to righteousness." I'll comment on that just a little bit later. "And this teacher of righteousness, says one of the rabbis, is the King Messiah. And of him, many others understand this, for he is a teacher come from God, and he shows us the way of righteousness." Now, it's interesting of this concept of the former rain being a teacher of righteousness fits in with the former rain or the first advent, when that was the purpose of the first advent, was for the teaching of righteousness. It was for instruction in righteousness. A lot of translations, you will notice, will translate that instead of moderately, the former rain in its seasons, or when it's called for. Well, that's the same thought as righteous. In due time. When it's ready, when it's right, when the time is right for it. So in rightness or in righteousness. These two thoughts seem to fit in much better in very good context. The former rain that we would suggest is for the purpose of preparing the earth for the sowing of the Lord's message. It came down to give the message that would give the element ready, prepare the earth for the work of sowing, fitting very well to a teacher of righteousness that was sent to produce this message. Now we come to the latter rain, the Lord's second advent. And we'd like to refer you to Proverbs 16, 15. Proverbs 16, verse 15. In the light of the king's countenance is life, and his favor as the cloud of the latter rain. There it is, the latter rain that is referred to, and it shows a restored favor of the Lord in the bringing back of conditions that had previously existed. And we think this condition is shown particularly in the wonderful developments of the past century in the land of Israel, in the bringing back of the Lord's people to their land, to the Jewish homeland, in the overseeing of their victories against tremendous odds. And of course, we all look with great curiosity, mingled with maybe a little bit of apprehension upon the coming events as the peace process breaks down and it looks like once again, it may come to a more open conflict, but we feel confident that if there is more conflict, the Lord will be with his people forward as he was in times past, that again, Israel will be the ones that the Lord will favor to come out, and his favor will be as the latter rain, or during the time of the latter rain. In James 5:7, in the New Testament, we have still another reference to these two rains. Be patient, therefore, unto the coming of the Lord. Behold, the husband waiteth for the precious fruit of the earth, and have long patience for it, until he receive the early and the latter rain. That these two advents, these two preparation periods, a preparation for planting and a preparation for harvesting, are both necessary to be there. And in this concept, we might just mention as a passing reference, the latter rain, the spring rain, usually precedes harvest. In fact, by as much as 3 months. Amos 4:7. In Amos, the fourth chapter, the seventh verse, he speaks of the latter rain, and he speaks of it in relation to the timing of the harvest. I withhold the rain from you when there were yet 3 months to the harvest, and I cause it to rain upon one city, and cause it not to rain upon another city. One piece was rained upon, and the piece whereupon it rained not withered. Now that is unusual. Rain, by almost definition, is non-discriminatory. If it rains in Sanford, I say the good chance it's going to rain in Orlando. And if it's raining on the east side of 1792, or 19, whatever the highway that you got out here, it's probably raining on the west side as well. And if it's raining on this building, I think there's a very good chance of raining on the park next door. You usually don't find rain going in one city, skipping to the next, and then going here and there. You do find that in our area. And we come from a crazy area. We're up north. When the tornadoes hit, they skip. Tamara Hack was telling us that when the tornado lived at Plainfield a few years ago, he hit the block for them, went over their house, hit the next block, went on its way. It just lifted it up for one house and kept on its way. All around was destruction, but theirs was not. But that's not rain as much as that is wind. That's a tremendous wind effect. Here it's a rain effect. In fact, Jesus in the New Testament uses rain as the very essence of non-discrimination. In Matthew, the fifth chapter, 45th verse, he said, "You may be children of your Father, which is in heaven, for he maketh the sun to rise on the evil and the good, and sendeth rain on the just and the unjust." So rain is non-discriminatory. But this rain that he is talking about prophetically here is a rain that has a discrimination to it. It rains in one city and not another. It rains in one parcel of land and not another. And where it rains, there's harvest. And where there's no rain, the crops wither and dry. He is evidently describing a prophetic rain that does not happen in the normal, ordinary course of meteorology. This happens unusually. Now, we've noticed that the rains generally precede the harvest. It's very rare to find rain and harvest. In fact, Proverbs 26:1 tells you just how rare it is. It gives an analogy to how rare it is to find rain and harvest. As snow in summer and as rain in harvest, so honor is not seemly for a fool. If you think it's honorable to call a fool his honor, then you might expect rain and harvest. But he said, the two don't go together like a horse and carriage and like love and marriage and whatever else that song had. The two are not synchronous. That when you've got rain, you're not expecting it in the harvest time. On the other hand, the harvest period was not a period devoid of rainwater. Now, let me make that point a little clearer. You don't have rain in harvest, but you have abundance of rainwater. Water that waters the crops comes from one of three, and probably some of you out there tell me four or five other sources, but one of three sources I'm familiar with. It will either come from rain, that's a very common source, or it will come from melting snow, and that's another common source for rain, that was previous rain that now is beginning to come down, or it will come from underground springs. And one of the main watering troughs in the Holy Land was the Jordan River. The Jordan River comes from all three sources are contributory. You go to Caesarea Philippi, up in the north, or I forget what it's called right now, name was gone for me. But the old Caesarea Philippi, you see Jordan come like a full-fledged river right out of the middle, right out of the base of Mount Hermon. It just comes almost like a river coming out of a rock. And it comes out quite broad. And not too deep, but not too shallow either. But then on the other hand, it is fed by four tributaries that go into the Jordan to give it the water. And it's greatly fed by the melting snows of Hermon. Psalm 133 used the illustration. As these dew upon Hermon, so is the water that covereth Israel. It comes in Hermon and it melts and it goes through the normal rainwater cycles that you have. So there is rain water from previously falling rains that have fed one of these other sources. In the book of Joshua, the third chapter, verse 15, there's an interesting little parenthetical note. It's right in the midst of a historical account. It's talking about the time of Israel crossing the Jordan. And he just puts a parenthesis in for your information. For Jordan overflowed its banks all the time of harvest. In other words, he said in the harvest, Jordan was beyond its banks. And that was normal. It was a flood stage. I lived on the Mississippi River. Well, 20 miles of Mississippi. I used to cover as a senior in high school, as a cub reporter for the local paper, the Mississippi River floods. And every spring we had them. Once the snow waters up in Minnesota melted and the river was fed, I remember this one year I went around taking pictures. I was doing photography for the paper. And as I was doing it, I was shooting them taking the children to school in the second floor of the schoolhouse by duck because the first floor was totally underwater. They took the children up from the second floor of the houses and bring them around to the schoolhouse and they had school on the second floor. Until the waters finally went down. My boss never did forgive me for trying to run the floodwaters in Gutenberg, Iowa, because I burned out the whole transmission in his, in his truck trying to get out of there. The rainwaters were overflowing tremendously. Well, that's the kind of thing he's saying that is usual, so that we don't find rain a great blessing at that time. Not only does it slow down the harvest, but it fuels the floods. It fuels the flooding waters. We want to talk just a little bit more about rain as a blessing before we get more into rain in its negative aspect. Rain as a blessing is from the concept of rain being representative not only of the Lord's presence, he comes as the rain, but as the Lord's message when he comes. Unfortunately, I didn't write down the text, the citations. You have to look up your concordance. You have to have some homework. If you walk in my statutes and you keep my commandments and do them, then I will give you rain in due season, and the land shall yield her increase, and the trees of the earth shall yield their fruit. Now Deuteronomy 32:2. My doctrine shall drop as the rain. My speech shall distill as the dew, as the small rain upon the tender herb, and as the showers upon the grass. Now notice here he's talking about the tender herb and the showers upon the grass. He's talking not the rain before sowing, but the rain before harvesting. It's particularly this latter rain, he says, will be accompanied with the spreading of my doctrine. It's something that we feel has been very much a mark of the past 100 years, that the Lord's doctrine has been coming back and is distilling, and it is starting to water the earth. In Psalm 72, verse 6, he said, he shall come down like rain upon the mown grass as the showers that water the earth. There again we have this same thought. Another text with a similar concept is in Isaiah, the 55th chapter, Isaiah 55, verses 10 and 11. For as the snow that cometh down, as the rain that cometh down, and as the snow from heaven, that returneth not hither, but watereth the earth, and maketh it bring forth in bud, that it may give seed to the sower and bread to the eater, so shall my word be that goeth forth out of my mouth. It shall not return to me void, but it shall accomplish that which I please. It shall prosper in the thing whereto I sent it. Okay, my time is speeding on. I want to go on to a different aspect of our subject. And that aspect is that we've seen the blessings of rain. We've seen how these blessings show how the Lord, in his return to the earth, brings a blessing. But we want to see how rain can also be a curse. Ask Noah. Or no, not so much Noah, but ask the other people on the earth at that time. There was too much rain. Ask the people of Egypt when the plagues came, and the rain was among those plagues, and the Red Sea experience. Ask Jesus Christ when he gave the story of the house built on the sand in Matthew 7, until the rains came and undermined the sand and the foundation of the house. Rains are there. Ezekiel 38:22, another example. Rain can be either. A good contrast in Deuteronomy 11, we don't have time to go into that. We need now to concentrate on rain and harvest. That was our subject there. We want to come into a specific rain. We've looked at rain as a general subject. Now we want to look at a specific rain. One of the specific rains the Lord talks about in prophecy is a judgmental rain on Babylon. This is found in the 51st chapter of Jeremiah. The chapter opens the doom of Babylon. 51 verse 11. When he uttereth his voice, there is a multitude of waters in the heaven, and he causeth the vapors to ascend from the ends of the earth. He maketh lightnings with rain, and bringeth the wind out of his treasures. Now we're not talking a soft shower. Now we're talking a lightning shower, a strong lightning storm. And there is one of these that is predicted, and it's the center of our remarks tonight. This is found in the last words of the prophet Samuel, the children of Israel. the 12th chapter of Samuel, Samuel gives his farewell address. He basically tells the people of Israel, you have erred for not accepting the judges, but for calling for a king. In doing this, you rejected God, you haven't rejected me. And basically, Samuel is giving a lecture, a scolding. But in the middle of his scolding, he puts an emphasis like no speaker can put. He says, let me emphasize my point. 1 Samuel 12, chapter 17 to 19. Is not the wheat harvest today? I will call upon the Lord, and he will send thunder and rain, that he may perceive and see that your wickedness is great, which you have done in the sight of the Lord in asking a king. So Samuel called upon the Lord, and the Lord said thunder and rain that day, and all the people greatly feared the Lord and Samuel. Now here was a speaker who could call for rain. I can never forget the time when I was in New Brunswick and Brother Levi Jacobs was giving a talk. And you know how dramatic Levi could be. And he was talking as Levi usually talked in Revelation. And he said, and there were thunders. And it just thundered outside the window. And there were lightnings, and the lightning came right down by the window. And I just thought, does he have cooperation or what? That's what Samuel had. Samuel had cooperation. He called for rain and it was there. But you notice, the rain didn't threaten just the crops. The people were afraid. So it was not a rain that threatened destruction of crops. It was a rain that threatened destruction of the populace. And the only way rain does that is a flood. This was a flood causing rain that Samuel saw. The antitype of that is given to us very clearly by the Lord in the prophet Isaiah. We're going to read from Isaiah the 28th chapter, and we're going to read verses 15 to 19. Because you have said, we have made a covenant with death, and with hell are we in agreement. When the overflowing scourge shall pass through it, it shall not come unto us. For we have made lies their refuge, and under falsehood have we hid ourselves. Therefore thus saith the Lord God, behold, I lay in Zion for a foundation stone, a tried stone, a precious cornerstone, a sure foundation. He that believeth shall not make haste. Judgment will lay to the line, and righteousness to the plummet, and the hail shall sweep away the refuge of lies, and the waters shall overflow the hiding place. Here is that flood, that rain in time of harvest, that rain that washes away the refuge of eyes of lies of the first lie that was ever told, thou shalt not surely die. And so that was making a covenant with death and saying, we're not worried about death, we just got to pass from one life to another. And so there will be a truth that will come out that will undermine that. And that has certainly been true in the last 100 years. As more and more of the denomination of Christendom have dropped that. We want to talk about one more rain. We think it's the same rain in connection with this. In the 10th chapter of Revelation, there is the scene of which there were seven thunders utter the voices. And John got out his pen to write down what they said. And the Lord said, no, don't write it down. Don't write it down because it's not for you to write down. And so he did. And that goes on. And so all we know is that there were seven thunders. We don't know much about them, but we do know that thunder is always connected with rain. It may be only coincidence, but I would question that it is. We have one passage in the Bible that names seven specific thunders. And this seems to describe the effect of the storm. You've heard the word euphemism. A euphemism is where there's something you don't like, you call it by something you do like. You make up a nice name for it instead. There was a standard euphemism for thunder. The voice of the Lord. When you heard the voice of the Lord, it said the voice of the Lord thundereth. Is talking about thunders. In the 29th Psalm, that phrase occurs seven times. There are seven voices of the Lord. And we're going to give you a suggestion, and it's nothing more than that. You know, the nice thing about a suggestion, if you've got a wastebasket handy, you can always throw it away. So this is going to be a suggestion, what these might mean. But they appeal to us as being these seven thunders. What is thunder? Thunder is the sound of lightning. You know the rule as children. You see a lightning bolt, you count the seconds till the thunder rolls, and you can tell how far it is away. That's all thunder is. It's the sound effect of lightning. There are scriptures that tell us what the lightnings are. His lightnings enlighten the earth, and the earth saw and trembled. Psalm 97. That the lightnings are flashes of truth. You see it. And every time there is a startling new truth, there is a sound effect with it. The sound is called controversy. It stirs up controversy. It stirs up turmoil. There is an effect that that lightning brings. And if we follow these seven through, and to follow these, I'm going to ask those of you who are familiar with the map of Israel to take this perspective. Stand with me on the top of Mount Hermon in the north of Israel. Picture a thunderstorm coming in over the Mediterranean, rolling in. You're seeing it rolling up over the Mediterranean. You're seeing it going over the Anti-Lebanon Mountains. And then you're seeing it make a sharp right turn and go south down the Jordan Valley to the Negev and then make a left turn and go back out to sea. A giant U-turn. Because I think that will help you understand the thunders of Psalm 29 better, is visualizing that graphic in front of you of where these thunders are. Give unto the Lord, O ye mighty, give unto the Lord God glory and strength. Give to the Lord the glory of his, like unto his name, do unto his name. Worship the Lord in the beauty of holiness. The first thunder. The voice of the Lord is upon the waters. The God of glory thundereth. The Lord is upon many waters. What happens when a thunderstorm goes over an open sea? Highway warning. It churns up the water. What are the waters? The restless masses of mankind. What is the first effect of knowledge? Is not the first effect to churn up the masses of mankind? To get them agitated, to get them saying, we want our place in the sun, we want our rights. One of the greatest influences for all the clamor for equality today is television. Because we find out what the haves have. And we want to have what the haves have. We want our share. So it roils up the water. That's the first thunder that we hear. Second thunder. The voice of the Lord is powerful. In the original, it's the voice of the Lord is in power. Not too much a different thought. But every new outbreak of knowledge, where do you first see it? Don't you first see it in military? As the new military things are developed, or spaceships are developed, whatever is developed, all we have knowledge is a spinoff. But it's developed for military advancement. As the knowledge of the Lord starts hitting the earth, there is the spinoff into all the military. It's in power. The voice of the Lord is in majesty. As soon as the war is over, what happens? You've got all the returning troops. You've got to put them to work. Up in the standard of living. We want better machines. We want better, higher standard of living. We want greater majesty for our homes. We want things that King Solomon never dreamed of. In fact, I must say, probably most of you Floridians have better air conditioning in your houses than Solomon had in his palace. It just wasn't available. It increases the standard. We have the majesty that's there. Then the fourth effect. The voice of the Lord breaketh the cedars. Yea, the Lord breaketh the cedars of Lebanon. He maketh them to skip like a young calf. Lebanon and Syrian, like a young unicorn. Now the storm has penetrated to the Anti-Lebanon Mountains. And you see it coming over the Lebanon, shaking the trees, the mighty trees that are there. You can almost visualize the intensity of the storm that he's building the image on. Cedars of Lebanon is used many times in the Bible. The strong leaders of the world, the leaders of Christendom, those who've held high positions all of a sudden they find that their positions are not so firm because they're being undermined by the investigative reporting and the press and the media, and they can no longer control of the way they wanted to control. And so the fourth effect of the increase of knowledge has been the undermining of this basis of leadership and power. Fifth effect, the voice of the Lord divideth the flames of fire. I don't know if you have lightning storms down here. You have those down in Florida? We sure have one up north. And you get in the middle of a big lightning storm. The lightning flashes so fast, you can't tell which comes first, the lightning or the thunder. It just boom, 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 boom. It really flashes all around you for seeming an hour or so at a time. That's the description he's making. The voice of the Lord is cleaving this fire faster than he can control it. We're living in an age of not planned obsolescence. Something comes off the drawing board, it's obsolete before it's off the drawing board. The rapidity of the increase of knowledge gets out of control. A man cannot handle that rapidity. That's the fifth effect of the increase. The sixth, now the storm has come down into the Negev. The voice of the Lord shaketh the wilderness. And then he tells you exactly where it is. It shaketh the wilderness of Kadesh. Do you remember when Israel entered the promised land, or didn't enter the promised land back in the days of the Exodus? Kadesh Barnea, down in the Negev, down south of Beersheba. That was the first point where the spies went in, and they didn't last. And that is the next effect of the Lord. Are you ready to enter into the kingdom arrangements? It puts that test to play. That same test is described in Ezekiel 20. We don't have time for that because we just have 2 minutes left. But it shakes this test. It puts the test to the people. Are you ready to enter? And we finally come to the seventh effect. The voice of the Lord maketh the hinds to calf and discovereth the forest, and in his temple everyone speaketh of his glory. That word discovered there is bad. Make it uncovered. The voice of the Lord makes the hinds a calf, and the forests are uncovered or laid bare. A fierce lightning storm would do two things. You would notice that so you have been farmers. If the cows are with calf, they'll bring to premature birth because of the frightened. They're so frightened by the storm that's around them. So he makes the hinds a calf by this coming down so threatening around them. And the lightning strips the barks off the trees. It lays bare the forests. That's the final device the Lord has in this increase of knowledge. To bring to premature birth the plans of man. They're not able to conceive in the due time. And so everything is laid bare. It bare all the way to the heart. 1 Corinthians 4:4. Judge nothing before the Lord come, who both will bring to light the hidden things of darkness and cause the intents of men's hearts to fail. This is the concept you have here. And those who see the voice of the Lord, and you see this from the above perspective, he said that you will be speaking of his glory in his temple, because it will show you how the development of the Lord's increase of knowledge and the current events around you is so typical. Yes, the Lord sitteth upon the flood, the harvest rain. The Lord sitteth king forever. The Lord will give strength to his people. The Lord will bless his people with peace.